Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and with me now, Connecticut Congresswoman Rosa DeLauro, Democrat from New Haven and surrounding communities that branch out in all directions toward Bridgeport, Waterbury, and Middletown. And Congresswoman DeLauro has a book very relevant to the healthcare debate and more called The Least Among Us, Waging the Battle for the Vulnerable. Congresswoman, welcome back to WNYC and congratulations on the book.
Thank you so much. It's a delight to be back with you, Brian.
So much of the news of the day intersects directly with your book. How do you see the Senate health care bill changes to Medicaid in the context of what you wrote about?
Well, that's really right on point, because when you take a look at what the social safety net is about, it's programs, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, certainly food stamps, nutrition programs, unemployment insurance, child tax credits, all of those issues which help people in need at a time of need. So that Medicaid and the cut to Medicaid from the repeal, a repeal of the Affordable Care Act, is about $834 billion. If you add to that what President Trump has put in his budget, which is another $610 billion in a cut to Medicaid, $1.4 trillion. Let's take it from both sides of the coin. This is absolutely a social safety net program. When you take a look what will happen with older Americans, they will be jettisoned from nursing homes, from long-term care. What happens then to their families who have to cope with the costs of dealing with a loved one's health care? You go to the first part of this. This is an area, Brian, that has not really seen the light of day that much, and that is about children with disabilities who have to rely, whose families rely on Medicaid, both in our school system and in their families, to take care of these children with severe disabilities.
So many Medicaid recipients are children and their mothers. The Times this morning, I don't know if you saw it, had a big piece singling out that nursing home aspect, that there are so many people in nursing homes funded by Medicaid, a lot of people who were formerly middle class and just lived long enough to run out of money. And they started in nursing homes when they needed nursing home care on Medicare, but that benefit expires after 100 days. And then if they're poor enough to not be able to afford their own extended stay, they are funded by Medicaid. Now, the Trump administration or the Senate health care bill does not remove the eligibility of those people per se. So what's the threat?
Well, the threat is that the resources will not be there in order for them to be able to do what it was intended to do, to keep people out of poverty, to be able to provide a social safety net, which is what I talk about in the book, when there is a need, and there is a need.
Here's a clip of Trump aide Kellyanne Conway on ABC This Week yesterday, asked by George Stephanopoulos about cuts to Medicaid.
These are not cuts to Medicaid, George. This slows the rate for the future, and it allows governors more flexibility with Medicaid dollars because they're closest to the people in need. Medicaid's imperative. Its founding was meant to help the poor, the sick, the needy, the disabled, children, some elderly, women, particularly pregnant women. We are trying to get Medicaid back to its original moorings.
Medicaid back to its original moorings. So is it fair to say that Medicaid has expanded beyond its intended purposes as listed there by Kellyanne Conway?
Well, it's interesting to listen to Kellyanne Conway. My colleague Susan Collins was kind when she said, I respectfully disagree with her. It's absurd what Kellyanne Conway said, and it really is a lie, because the very, very populations that she listed are the populations who are being served and helped by Medicaid. And it's interesting with regard to children. Children are between Medicaid and health care, the CHIP program, the Children's Health Care Program, 50% of the Medicaid beneficiaries who take advantage of these programs are children.
I guess the Trump and the Republican position is Medicaid could still be a program that helps all of the people who you list, you know, in the book as the groups, the vulnerable groups that you're mm-hmm. concerned about. But what Obamacare did was to expand it upward in income level eligibility so that it's now becoming the health insurer for more working class Americans, not just for the truly vulnerable. Kind of, you know, they're worried that it's on the way to single payer.
Well, you know, the fact is that it is about strengthening and expanding the social safety net. What is it? And sure, it is a listing of government services and programs, but what is it morally? It is to provide people with the opportunity to be able to get some assistance during a time of need. It is also to make sure that children are not punished because their families may happen to be low income.
So if you're working class and you don't have the means to afford private insurance, same difference.
Same difference. And what is the biggest issue today economically in our society? It's the people in jobs that simply do not pay them enough to live on, and health care is part of that.
And Kellyanne Conway's assertion that cutting the rate of growth is necessary for the federal budget and Medicaid is not being cut from today's spending numbers. This is just about cutting the rate of growth of Medicaid?
It is absolutely, and don't take my word for it. You can talk to Center for the Budget and Public Priorities. You can talk to Families USA. You can talk to any of the organizations who, this is a severe decimating cut to the Medicaid program, which will have just devastating effects.
Because the need would be expected to be that much more in the future, even though it sounds like you're acknowledging this is a cut in the rate of growth. There's not going to be less Medicaid spending today, tomorrow or 5 years from today than there is today in sheer dollars, right?
Oh, I believe there will be less Medicaid.
You do?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. And that is particularly because if you take the other aspect of the Republican health care plan, which is to really to provide a massive tax break to the wealthiest families. The 400 richest families in the nation will get a $7 million tax cut every single year. And that's because they are repealing the unearned income tax, the taxes on pharmaceuticals and medical devices.
My guest is Democratic Congressman Rosa DeLauro of Connecticut. She also has a new book called The Least Among Us, Waging the Battle for the Vulnerable. And our phone number, we'll have time for a couple of phone calls for her from the New Haven area that she represents or anywhere else, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. How much do you think this is a matter of philosophy? Because the Republicans mm-hmm. would certainly bristle at the notion that they're mean and heartless and they don't care about the poor and vulnerable. They would say that is just so much Democratic Party rhetoric. Mm-hmm. So how do you understand the real difference between the two parties? What
well,
is it really?
The real difference is role of government. But as I point out in the book and many over and over again, in so many instances with regard to the social safety net programs, that they have been supported by Democrats and Republicans. When there has been a crying need in this country to move forward, and whether it was about food stamps and nutrition, where you had a McGovern Dole, wherewith you have the child tax credit issue, where you're talking about, yes, a Newt Gingrich and a Jay Rockefeller and a Chris Dodd and others. And
bipartisan.
That has been bipartisan throughout our history, except when we begin with Newt Gingrich, where we began to see the attack on the social safety net, followed by the Tea Party and their attack, and now a massive assault on the social safety net. You know, Brian, government should be able to work for people. I describe that in what I learned in the book from my home, from my mother and father who served in public life, that you make government work for people. And that's where the difference lies. It is in addition to what I've said, the role of government and what role it should play. In the past, it's meant, let's take care of serious problems. And today, it really is mean-spirited and heartless.
And how do you see Speaker Paul Ryan's role on the, in this? He's the only Republican who actually gets his name in a chapter title in your book, Chapter 12, Paul Ryan's Assault on the Poor. Mm-hmm. Why do you single him out?
Well, I single him out because he talks about so many of these programs as being a hammock. He thinks by humiliating people, what I say in the book is if you can humiliate people, make receiving government onerous, aid onerous enough, people will opt out voluntarily, redouble their efforts to avoid hunger, illness, and being laid off. So he is complicit in this effort and not recognizing the value and what the social safety net has done to lift people out of poverty in this nation.
He thinks if you're on food stamps, you're in a hammock. He uses that word,
hammock. Yes, he uses the hammock. Absolutely. It's what's been talked about is the makers and the takers and viewing these people as takers.
We'll continue in a minute with Congresswoman DeLauro and your phone calls. Stay with us. Brian Lehrer on WNYC with Democratic Congresswoman Rosa DeLauro of Connecticut. She has a new book called The Least Among Us, Waging the Battle for the Vulnerable. And Henrian Ossining, you're on WNYC with Congresswoman DeLauro. Hello.
Hi, good morning, Brian. Good morning, Congresswoman.
Hello, Henry.
My question really comes from the fact that I was kind of in college during the 60s. And what I noticed in the politics of the 60s was that we became most engaged in the discussion of the Vietnam War when we eliminated the draft, so that the decisions made in Washington affected all of us, not just people in Washington sending up people to war. And by analogy, what I'm asking you is, is it feasible to have a system where all members of Congress, both in the House and in the Senate, agree that whatever legislation they pass that involves social network legislation, they themselves will get the same benefits, comparable benefits, the lowest level that they pass?
Interesting. Now, don't Congress members need to get their health care on the Obamacare exchanges?
Yes, absolutely. My staff, myself, I am on an exchange, and that's what the law requires, and that's what we do.
Does that satisfy that standard for you, Henry?
I'm not sure, because I'm not sure I understand it well enough. But my question, I guess, would be whether that means that if benefits are eliminated, that they would be also eliminated for those people in the Congress.
Well, it's an interesting question, Henry, because at the outset, when my Republican colleagues were crafting the legislation, they were going to exempt members of Congress. That was immediately turned around because members of Congress should not be exempted. If we are going to cut out what is known as essential benefits, and that's essentially maternity care, substance abuse, treatment, emergency services, prescription drug care, that if the rest of the public is not going to be able to partake of those benefits, members of Congress shouldn't either.
Hugh in New Rochelle, you're on WNYC with Congresswoman DeLauro. Hello. Hugh, are you there?
Hi. Yep, I'm here.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to say that I have an elderly aunt who I am the guardian for because she was scammed out of tens of thousands of dollars and is almost out of money. She's in the nursing home, and as I understand it, if this all goes through, when she runs out of her remaining money, she will be kicked out of the nursing home rather than it being picked up by Medicaid. And I'm really just asking, are we really talking about just throwing these people out on the street? The family really can't take care of her at this point.
Well, that's essentially what will happen. And I think that's what people have to begin to understand. The move of cutting the Medicaid resources is going to be a catastrophe for families, for working families, for middle-class families, where they've had the opportunity to be able to have a loved one with good care in the facility, and that money is going to be cut off. You'll either have to take in with your own family your loved one, or I don't quite know what they anticipate will happen to these folks. We will go back to a day and understand that Medicaid followed to fulfill this need which you are talking about, which has given you comfort that your aunt is in a good place. And if she is not, that means, are you prepared to take her back?
And at least if you're in New York State, since you're calling from New Rochelle, New York State has relatively generous state-level Medicaid benefits and would do what they can do to not see your aunt kicked out of a nursing home if that's where she is or is going to be. But did you notice, Congresswoman, that one of the parts of the Senate bill is to take money away
from the states,
from the more generous states like New York?
That's right.
Because they, I guess if New York is generous, then they get, well, a state gets like a 50% match from the federal government for Medicaid,
right,
something like
right.
that.
Yes.
So if the state spends more, then they get more from Washington. And I guess they want to make that harder to do.
Well, they're going to make it harder to do in that respect, but also they are going to what you call, it's in essence, it's a block granting. They're going to cut back the money that goes to states. States are going to be in the position, I'll use my state of Connecticut, which has had a difficult budget cycle here. Mm-hmm. We haven't come to a conclusion yet. They will not be able to pick up the cost for Medicaid when the resources are gone. So what you're beginning to do is to ration care, whether it is for the elderly or for children.
Is Connecticut, with its budget problems at the state level, an example of how you can't be endlessly generous to the vulnerable?
Well, but Connecticut is an example of why the federal government needs to have a role in assisting with the problem, so that Connecticut and the way states, the way it now works, is that states can look at what they need and have the flexibility with eligibility for the program. This actually removes that flexibility and eligibility for the
states. So you're making this case. A lot of Democrats make a similar case. And yet, look what's happened in national elections, not just the election of Donald Trump, but what's happened to the Congress over multiple election cycles now. And let me play a clip of your colleague, Democratic Congressman Tim Ryan of Ohio, with Don Lemon on CNN last week.
I don't think people in the Beltway are realizing just how toxic the Democratic Party brand is in so many of the countries.
You think Nancy Pelosi is more toxic than Donald Trump?
You know what? The honest answer is, in some areas of the country, yes, she is. That's the honest answer.
So do you support Nancy Pelosi's continuing leadership? And what about the larger critique of how the Democratic Party is not connecting with large swaths of working America?
I think Nancy Pelosi has been a very strong leader. She helped to and passed the Affordable Care Act. In addition to that, many other pieces of legislation, and is well noted for her ability to coalesce and unify the Democratic caucus, which she has done, now fighting the repeal and now fighting the Trump-Ryan budget.
Do you think she is not the issue?
Well, I believe what is happening is the latter point, Brian, which is, and I think that where Tim is accurate, is that Democrats have to begin to reconnect with working America. That is the problem all over this country, not just in the heartland, not in the Rust Belt, but all over the country. Why? The single biggest issue today is that people are in jobs, do not pay them enough to live on. They are struggling. They can't afford to send their kids to school. They look at their child and they say, you are bright as hell, but we can't afford to pay for an education for you. They cannot afford their health care. They cannot take a vacation, and they do not think about retiring. That's the struggle. Democrats have got to reconnect with understanding what that's about, walk in the shoes of people in this nation. And there, I believe, we will connect with people again if that's the direction we go in.
So why do more people across America in congressional elections for multiple cycles now connect with Paul Ryan, say, and all his members, even though he's waging what you call an assault on the poor, and you'd say the Democrats aren't.
Well, I think that the Democrats have to go back to where they have been in the past, and that is to talk about jobs, talk about increased wages. One of the battles I describe in the book is over the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, a trade agreement which put working America at grave risk, which is why we were able to defeat it. Now, these we have to reconnect on have an economic agenda that addresses the issues that they are so vulnerable on today. And I believe Democrats can do it.
Democratic Congresswoman Rosa DeLauro from Connecticut, her new book is called The Least Among Us, Waging the Battle for the Vulnerable. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be with you.